And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. It is time for Secrets. We are up to volume number 351. I always lead off and tell you how much this is my favorite program of the month because we're covering a multitude of items. But before we dive in, first I need to get our prayer warriors involved. Got an email from Coach Dwayne. He said his niece, Elizabeth, her dear friend Debbie has been in ICU since Sunday with an undiagnosed condition. She's on a ventilator and a feeding tube. She has two children, and her husband has not left her side. Please hold Debbie up in your prayers that they're able to diagnose the problem and that they're able to bring Debbie back to full health for her husband, for her children. Got an email from Ollie, and he asked that we pray for him and his marriage. He asked that his wife is able to get a job and that he has more power to preach the gospel on Sunday evenings. And if you have a prayer request, please don't hesitate to email me, phone us at the ministry. We're more than happy to pray for you. I know our buddy Steve down in Louisiana, his mom's got some issues. Steve's got some health issues. His brother's got some health issues. And I know Steve could certainly use your prayers. Timmy up in New York, David in Indiana. The Lord knows what they need. Just hold them up in your prayers. I appreciate that. But like I said, you can email, you can phone us. We'll be happy to pray for you. We're honored and blessed that you would ask us to pray for you. Now, I do want to touch on this subject, and it's not something that I come to you lightly with. I know that the Biden administration and all of the subsequent shenanigans pulled by both sides of the aisle in Congress, as well as the Biden administration, they sorely taxed our revenues, and they declared basically outright war against the middle class. And we understand this. That's why we didn't raise the postage rates for quite a long time. Even though we lose money on the postage, we hesitated. Sandra and I both hesitated on raising the postage, even though we knew we needed to go up. And postage continues to climb, and we may be forced to increase the postage for orders in the future. Right now, we're going to hold service and see how things go, but we could really use your support. We appreciate your prayers, and there are a number of you who have maintained cheerfully giving to this ministry. You know, I look back, and the years fly by, but Tex retired over 8 years ago, and I've been blessed to be behind this mic for 8 years. And before Tex retired, we had discussed on a number of occasions the fact that there are many ministries that were doing pretty well when their originator, the pastor that founded the ministry, was in place. But a number of these ministries have closed because of a lack of support. And we've made it 8 years. All our bills are paid. We have been able to maintain. We're not making a lot of money. Never have, never desired to. Honestly, if we wanted to make a lot of money, we would have distanced ourselves on the Jewish issue. But the Bible lays it out plain, and Tex was a great teacher and opened a number of eyes. We could definitely use your financial support. We're not going to shutter the doors anytime soon, and we've always said that we will go as long as the good Lord wants us to be here, but we are struggling a little bit, and we could use your help. And I don't take this lightly. It's not something that I look forward to having to impart with you, our dear friends. And I appreciate you sticking with me as I learned how to host this radio program. But we really could use your support. And we thank you for your continued support and your prayers for this ministry. Okay, I want to dive into Rand Paul's Festivus Report. I try to get it to you in this program at the beginning of every year. And last year, the national debt was over $36 trillion. In 365 days, Republicans and Democrats, entrenched in seats of power in Washington, D.C., along with the bureaucrats who were not elected, have managed to almost add $4 trillion more dollars to the debt. It's nearly $40 trillion. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Pet projects continue to erode our financial system. And we keep electing these jackwagons into office. And they have ceded so much of their power to bureaucrats because they don't have time to be bothered with the minutiae of running the country, even though that's what they were elected to do. But on this Festivus Report, Rand Paul has a number of items, and he lays it out. I'm going to cover some of them. There is TikTok therapy fighting drugs with influencers. Health and Human Services spent $1.5 million on an innovative multi-level strategy to reduce drug use in Latinx communities through celebrity influencer campaigns. So influencers in social media were paid $1.5 million to reduce drug use, not for everybody in America, but just the Latins, the Latinx, because we have to be PC. It's almost as bad as Netanyahu paying cash to influencers to talk positively about Israel. Maybe it's worse. There is cartoon climate crusaders in Pakistan. The Department of State gave almost $250,000 to Stand for Peace in Islamabad to produce a television cartoon series to teach kids in Pakistan how to fight climate change. Health and Human Services spent $1.9 million on a hybrid mobile phone family intervention designed to reduce childhood obesity among Latino families in Los Angeles County. Health and Human Services spent over $40 million on influencers, once again, to promote getting vaccinated against COVID-19 for racial and ethnic minority groups. Health and Human Services spent $2.9 million with the University of Michigan to study the effect of screen time on parent child relationships. The U.S. Department of Agriculture spent $141,000 to create resilient and equitable local food network that prioritizes culturally relevant food for low-income LGBT people of color from the Bronx and Brooklyn. I hope this is making your blood boil because I'm getting upset just reading it. Health and Human Services spent $6.9 million using data to analyze and model trauma and surgery outcomes in sub-Saharan Africa. Health and Human Services, once again, $3.3 million to Northwestern University to hire 15 people, erect scientific neighborhoods, install safe space ambassadors, and form endless committees to dismantle systemic racism. Good night, nurse. USAID gave EcoHealth Alliance, yes, those people from the COVID-19 scamdemic, gave EcoHealth Alliance $54 million to collect bat coronaviruses and transport them to Wuhan for gain-of-function experiments. Again, no, this isn't a time warp. This is in this year's Festivus report. The NIH, the National Institute of Health, extended funding for Dr. Fauci's Beagle experiments that cost taxpayers $13.8 million. The NIH also spent $5.2 million to dose dogs with cocaine. But wait, there's more. The Department of Veterans Affairs wasted over $1 million teaching teenage ferrets how to binge drink alcohol. These are programs that we are funding with our taxpayer dollars. Biden's USDA funded a $1 million collaboration to soup up bird flu viruses with the Wuhan Institute of Virology's parent organization and a researcher affiliated with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The National Science Foundation spent over $497,000 on a video game challenge for children. The National Science Foundation and other federal agencies paid over $14 million to make monkeys play a Price is Right inspired video game. What good do these programs do other than fund researchers and NGOs? Nothing. Monkeys playing Price is Right is something that we needed to waste money on. USAID squandered $2 million for gender-affirming care, activism, and influence campaigns in Guatemala. The National Science Foundation committed $2.4 million to programs that promote insects as food for humans. The Department of Defense, not to be outdone, funded $2.8 million in grants that have paid for aborted human fetal tissue to be implanted in humanized mice. But wait, there's more. The national debt accrues interest payments every year. In fiscal year 2025, to cover the interest on these tyrants in D.C. spending money they don't have, we paid $1.22 trillion in interest. Schools received nearly $200 billion in COVID relief funds that was wasted on things like rooms at Caesar's Palace, renting out Major League Baseball stadiums, and ice cream trucks. But NASA had to have their hand. They paid $1.8 billion overage for a shuttle that's 6 years behind schedule and left astronauts stranded in space. The Biden Department of Transportation received $7.5 billion from Congress to fund electric vehicle charger stations nationwide, but only 68 charging stations are up and running. Do the math. 68 into $7.5 billion. That's a lot of zeros per charging station. Health and Human Services blew through a $22.6 billion grant on migrant programs paid for things like furniture, car repairs, home down payments, as well as welfare for illegal immigrants. That's just a few of the things that Rand Paul reports in his Festivus Report 2025. Man, no wonder our economy is in the tank. career politicians and bureaucrats that aren't even elected to office are blowing through money. Well, it's OPM, other people's money. I don't care. It's like having the same ideology that, well, I've got checks, so I have money. Goodness. Well, everybody would have you believe that the Republicans have your best interest at heart. Democrats want to claim that, but we know that they have gone off the rails. But the Republicans in Congress have tried to portray themselves as for the people, by the people, of the people. If that was the case, why did they quietly insert and then just as quietly remove a provision from the 2026 Interior and Environment Spending Bill after the public was notified and outrage ensued for a blatant attempt to shield powerful chemical corporations from accountability? It was Section 453 of House Resolution 4754. This would have blocked federal funding for the EPA to update pesticide labels, guidance, or policy if those updates differed in any way from prior health assessments. So in essence, instead of reading the legalese that I'm looking at for Section 453, they wanted to freeze pesticide labels in place, regardless of emerging science. So if something came out and it showed that something like Roundup was a carcinogen, they wouldn't have to update the label because it would be frozen in place. And, as critics have said, this would allow the manufacturers to argue in court it's impossible to update warnings, since this was in the bill, and it effectively would gut failure to warn lawsuits and strip families of legal recourse when harm occurs. Do you know who led this public outrage? Children's Health Defense. They got on Twitter and they posted, quote, "Congress is about to wipe out your rights to sue pesticide companies." They've quietly tucked in a new spending bill. Section 453 blocks updated health warnings and gives chemical manufacturers immunity even when people are harmed. Cancer, Parkinson's, infertility, 57,000 plus products, zero accountability. This must be pulled before it reaches the floor. So why was this being pushed? Well, we know that these chemical manufacturers have big money, lobbyists. They fund the war chest for these politicians to remain in office. Bayer, the German manufacturer of glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, experienced a stock price crash and is on the hook for $16 billion in settlements. They are repeatedly losing court cases because of the overwhelming evidence that glyphosate is connected to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Likewise, Paraquat, manufactured by ChemChina, is connected to Parkinson's disease and litigation is underway. It is a pesticide that is banned for use in China, yet they sell it to America and now want legal immunity when we get Parkinson's from their product. Who wins? Big chemical manufacturers. Who loses? Families, farmers, workers, and children. And it was quietly removed from the bill. Goodness. Yeah, they're looking out for our best interest. Not. I was chatting today via email with my buddy Mark up in Michigan, and we were talking about vehicles. He's a mechanic up in Michigan. I was an automotive machinist for over 10 years. Loved it. Had a ball. I always told our customers, how fast can you afford to go? Because I could make your engine scream. Enjoyed it. But when I was in the automotive industry, and well, growing up as a teenager too, I drove a Ford F-100. And everybody teased me. They say, you know what Ford stands for? Found on road dead. Well, that's kind of apropos if you think about the EV revolution that has almost bankrupted Ford and General Motors, you know, when Biden was in office, the EVs were all the rage. And his administration forced electrical vehicles down our throats. Biden was filmed in a photo op in a F-150 Ford Lightning. He loved it, said it was great. His administration said it was good for the environment. But they never said the quiet part out loud about having to rely on other countries to dig up the earth for these rare earth minerals, the energy it takes to make a battery, and the toxic chemicals that leak after the disposal. But really, Americans weren't clamoring for these EVs. They were incentivized under the Biden administration. Got a $7,500 kickback for buying one of these things. They jacked the price of gas up to almost $5 a gallon. So, in essence, it was something to consider. $5 a gallon for your gas guzzler, or buy an EV and get money back. But the manufacturers were losing money hand over fist. But that wasn't enough for Biden and his regime. No, they wanted to force Americans to buy these EVs and manufacturers to make them. Biden's EPA implemented new rules that set targets for the number of electric models produced in the United States as a percentage of all light-duty vehicles created each year. Car manufacturers knew the EV business was a losing venture from the start, but they were pressured to make them anyway. Even after the rebates and the propping up by the government, these companies didn't make enough money off an EV. Ford tried to make it work, and they couldn't make a profit. South Korea's LG Energy Solution said that Ford Motor has terminated an EV battery supply deal worth $6.5 billion. So Ford is willing to take a $20 billion hickey than to keep making these electric vehicles. By them shuttering this department, this is the most dramatic example yet of the auto industry's retreat from battery-powered models in response to the weakening EV demand. Ford lost $1.4 billion on its Model E electric vehicle division in the third quarter. It lost $5.1 billion in 2024 and lost $4.7 billion in 2023. Ford expects the Model E losses to increase to $5.5 billion in 2025. General Motors also lost significant money in their EV division. A recent survey by AAA, American Automobile Association, found only 16% of U.S. adults report being very likely or likely to purchase a fully electric vehicle as their next car. This is the lowest percentage of interest in EVs since 2019. Now, I can tell you, living in Texas and the miles that I drive, it's not feasible to me to have an EV. Can you imagine the drain on the electrical grid if everybody in Texas decided to have an EV like they wanted to mandate in California? I mean, I remember rolling blackouts and brownouts throughout California. I remember the governor, Newsom, coming out and saying, hey, we don't want you to plug in your EV to charge between the hours of 6 and 10 p.m., because that's our peak energy usage and we can't afford another blackout. Let alone how many times houses burnt to the ground because the battery in the EV decided it was done and it would catch fire and it would burn for days. Just burn down the whole house. That's why they started telling people don't charge your EV in your garage. Make sure it's away from the house. Yeah, these things are great. Then they started forcing schools to buy electric buses. It happened in New York. There was a statewide mandate that all school bus purchases must be electric. Except for one issue. The parents have already recognized this issue. It's New York. It's winter. It gets quite cold. Some bus drivers are turning down the heat on these buses or off completely in an attempt to conserve battery life on their electric school buses. The kids are coming home saying the bus is freezing cold and the parents are having to give these kids hand warmers. Think about it. Where does the heat come from an electric vehicle? In a gas-powered car, it comes through your radiator system. You have a heater core up in the firewall, and it takes the hot water that your engine has created, and that's where you get your heat. In an EV, it's got to come from the same battery that's powering the bus. There have been reports of these buses breaking down. There was one parent who said that his child's school bus broke down. They sent a replacement bus, but it was more than 30 minutes late. These kids stood outside for over 30 minutes in the cold, waiting for a bus. And the parents said there's no reason that these children should be freezing all the time. That's a fact. They shouldn't be freezing. But the state shouldn't have mandated that these schools spend millions, and I mean millions of dollars on these electric buses. There should have been some thinking ahead. Some forethought, I guess you would say. But they were caught up in the fevered pitch of the Biden EV agenda, these Green New Energy Deal wackos wanting to force these electric vehicles on everybody. It's even so obvious that PBS, the public broadcasting system, in 2024 warned about EV performance in the cold. Duh. It's not rocket science. It really is not rocket science. All right. I know I'm running short on time for the first half, but I got to get to this one. The World Cup soccer tournament is coming to America, and there are going to be games all across the country. And there are some that are going to be played up in the liberal bastion of Seattle. You know, Seattle, the home of this progressive ideology. Well, come to find out, the directors of the World Cup have sent a couple of Muslim teams to play their match. They're in the group in Seattle. They're going to play at Lumen Field there in Seattle. There's going to have six games this year. And the organizing committee up in Seattle is planning a special gay pride game for June 26th. They are dubbing the game Seattle Pride Match. They've procured gay art from fans through a contest meant to be used in Seattle's citywide celebration. This gay game is probably going to run into ethical problems because the teams are from the Islamic Republic of Iran and Egypt. Iran. Same-sex relations there are criminalized with punishments ranging from flogging to the death penalty. Egypt is known to use its debauchery laws to prosecute gay acts. Yep. Hedda McClendon, the committee's senior vice president, said, quote, "We're working with small businesses so the region's LGBTQ-owned enterprises are ready to benefit from the tournament's unprecedented visitor surge," close quote. A pro-sodomite organization, and the games are going to be played by two Muslim nations. Now, the Seattle Pride Match Advisory Committee, a member, his name is Eric Wall, stated on social media, quote, "The matchup of two countries where it is illegal to be gay is actually a good thing for the Pride Match," close quote. Film at 11. Boy, if you think what's going on in Minneapolis now is crazy, wait until you see what happens when all the Muslims come to Seattle. I guess we'll have to keep our eyes open. That's going to take care of the first half. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me some of your time. I have to take a brief pause. When we come back, we're going to dive right back in. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? I'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. We have a brand new book that we are offering through the ministry. exhaustively researched, Whitney Webb's One Nation Under Blackmail is a damning indictment of the consequences resulting from the nearly century-old relationship between both U.S. and Israeli intelligence, along with the organized crime network known as the National Crime Syndicate. This book explores how that nexus between intelligence and organized crime directly developed the sexual blackmail tactics and networks that would later enable pedophile and sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. This is a two-volume set. We're only asking $45. Please add $6 shipping and handling. That'll make your total $51 for One Nation Under Blackmail. You can order your copy today by phoning us toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-800-234-9673. If you care to phone our regular line, that number is 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. You can use those charge cards at our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. Now, if you care to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy, and you can mail it to us here at 4819 R. O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas. And our zip code is 78669. Okay, now let's return to our regular program. Today we're covering Secrets, volume number 351. There's no doubt you have heard about the fraud that's being committed in the Somali community up in Minnesota. But it is worse than a lot of people really realize. Scott Bessent, the Secretary of Treasury, has issued a guarantee that these Somali-linked fraudsters in Minnesota will be snagged, but he likewise points to disturbing tapes of Keith Ellison, the state's attorney general, allegedly saying he'll squash probes into people charged with fraud. Bessent said, quote, "That's part of following the money. There are evidently some disturbing tapes of A.G. Ellison in meetings with people who donated to him, them calling for political favors to stop the investigations. So we'll see. I don't want to get ahead of the investigation. It's going to be very methodical. I can guarantee you, when the bear trap snaps, we're going to get these folks. We're going to follow the money, whether it's over the two counties here in Minneapolis-St. Paul or whether it's to East Africa." Close quote. One of the leaked clips that are out there of Ellison has him saying, quote, "But when you tell me, hey, this is a problem, I call somebody and say, what's going on? And if we don't want to do what the agency's saying, please do. I call the agency head or the governor and say, we cannot do this. I mean, just we do this fairly regularly." Close quote. Allegedly, after this meeting, there was a huge influx into his coffers. And when there was indictments handed out, they refunded the money. Now, I watched the video. Nick Shirley posted a video. It was on X, Twitter. And I watched it about the Learing Center, the Quality Learing Center, receiving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, in grants for a daycare center. But there were no children in this daycare center. It was owned by Somalis. Well, that spurred a whole lot of independent journalists to do some research and look and see if this is going on in other neighborhoods across the country. This did not sit well with the Attorney General of Washington State. His name is Nick Brown. He posted a statement on X or Twitter, warning these independent journalists to stop investigating fraudulent Somali daycare centers or they could be charged with a hate crime. Threw the gauntlet down right there and then. Harmeet Dillon is the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights. She rebutted Nick Brown's post, saying, quote, "Any state official who chills or threatens to chill a journalist's First Amendment rights will have some splaining to do." close quote. Nick Shirley exposed about a dozen smallly owned state-funded child care facilities in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Well, because of this report, in Kent, Washington, Chris Sims, an independent journalist, visited seven Somali child care sites and reported they were, quote, very unhappy, close quote, to see him. Mr. Sims wrote, quote, there was no sign of kids or being a daycare facility. I was told by a few they weren't daycares despite receiving taxpayer dollars. One yelled, call the police behind the door, close quote. Jonathan Cho and Cam Higby, other independent journalists, visited an alleged Somali daycare facility in Seattle that receives hundreds of thousands of taxpayer funds, and the person who answered the door said there was no daycare there in the present or the past. Another listed child care facility, a house in a residential neighborhood in Kent, Washington, has received over $863,000 since 2023. Residents there say this is no daycare. This is why Besant has unleashed the dogs to start investigating in Minneapolis, St. Paul. There's also been reports in Ohio, in New York, find out about Washington State, anywhere there's Somali communities, the ones that Barack Obama brought in and dumped, claiming refugee. They're scamming you and I, John Q. taxpayer, for tens of millions of dollars. And they got away with it for a little bit. We'll see where this leads. Kamala Harris, big time Green New Deal supporter. Sky is falling. Sky is falling. Climate change, blah, 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 right? Well, it seems that her and Doug Emhoff, her husband, have just purchased an $8 million mansion in Malibu. It's an exclusive Oceanside neighborhood. This after having spent years warning that these communities could be threatened by climate crisis. I've posed this question before. Why do these climate doomers buy oceanfront property if they know that global warming is coming and the sea levels are going to rise and their property is going to be underwater? According to the Washington Free Beacon, this luxury pad is, quote, perched in a prime coastal location with breathtaking ocean views, close quote. This is the same coastline Harris said is at risk of facing extreme flooding. There was a climate model issued by the Biden-Harris administration that determined Point Doom State Beach, just a short walk from Harris's new property, would be severely damaged by sea level rise even under the model's most modest projections. Harris wrote, quote, our oceans are warming. Sea levels are rising. Extreme weather is destroying our communities. We are poisoning the planet, close quote. As vice president, Harris warned of the impact that climate change was going to have on these coastal communities. Biden made Harris the chief spokeswoman for his billion-dollar Climate Ready Coast initiative. The administration distributed large grants for projects nationwide in support of these coastal communities. The Biden-Harris administration's Interior Department published a study that concluded that up to 75% of California's beaches may be completely eroded by the year 2100. Yet they bought the property, over $8 million worth of property. Now this luxury pad boasts some of the luxuries that the Biden administration targeted with burdensome regulations. There is a gas-powered stove and fireplace. The Biden-Harris administration introduced regulations that would have banned half of the gas stove models on the market. The home also has a tankless water heater. The Biden-Harris administration finalized regulations in its final weeks that would have banned roughly 40% of the tankless water heaters on the market. But as I've said before, Harris is not the only former prominent climate doomer and gloomer that has bought a swanky coastal property. Nope. Martha's Vineyard, up in Massachusetts, boasts Barack Obama as a resident. They bought a nearly $15 million home in 2019 that's projected to be underwater within 75 years, according to these federally funded climate models. Likewise, Obama built another mansion in Hawaii that's going to be underwater. So if it really was fact instead of a hoax, why are these so-called experts buying these expensive properties on the coastline? Found this at Zero Hedge, Tyler Durden, Larry Page, and Sergey Brin. They are co-founders of Google. Well, there is something afoot between these two gents because of legislation that is percolating through Sacramento. They are quietly removing portions of their financial empires from California. 10 days before Christmas, Mr. Brin terminated or moved 15 California LLCs that oversee some of his business interests and investments out of the state. 7 of the companies were converted into Nevada entities. More than 45 California LLCs associated with Mr. Page filed documents in December to either become inactive or move out of the state. A trust with ties to Mr. Page purchased a $71.9 million mansion in Miami's Coconut Grove neighborhood. Another entity jointly managed by Brin and Page moved out of California and to Nevada on Christmas Eve. The shrinking footprints of both Google founders coincide with a proposed California ballot initiative backed by the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, as well as the United Healthcare Workers West, UHW, which would impose a one-time 5% tax on the assets of residents worth more than $1 billion. No wonder they're getting out of Dodge. The rats are leaving the sinking ship. Well, California is facing a huge financial problem because they're giving free health care to illegal aliens instead of deporting them. It's a sanctuary state, you know. Welfare, housing, free food, free health care, free education to illegal immigrants. And they want to tax billionaires a 5% tax on their assets. That's genius. Boy, y'all keep it up there in Sacramento. Elon Musk recognized this years ago. He bailed out of California, citing high taxes and radical left-wing state leadership. Can't call Elon an idiot, can you? The writing's on the wall. But we're going to stay in California. Let's go to Los Angeles in particular. Spencer Pratt, reality TV star, wife is Heidi Montag, another reality TV star. They held a rally in Palisades because their home is one of the ones that burned down. And it was the They Let Us Burn protest. The Pacific Palisades inferno killed 12 people, destroyed more than 6,500 homes. Spencer Pratt said, quote, on January 7, 2025, Heidi and I lost our home. We lost every material possession we own. My parents lost their home too, and with it, decades of memories lost inside those walls, close quote. But his remarks quickly shifted from grief to anger as he denounced city and state authorities for what he called a systemic failure to protect the ordinary citizens. Mr. Pratt said, quote, the system in Los Angeles isn't struggling. It's fundamentally broken. It is a machine designed to protect the people at the top and the friends they exchange favors with, while the rest of us drown in toxic smoke and ash. Business as usual is a death sentence for Los Angeles, and I'm done waiting for someone to take real action. That's why I'm running for mayor. And let me be clear. This just isn't a campaign. This is a mission. And we're going to expose the system. Pratt accused Governor Newsom of presiding over a bureaucratic regime more interested in process than in protecting lives and property. So, Spencer Pratt is going to run for mayor. Well, the current mayor, Karen Bass, who just happened to be in Ghana, I think, when the fires broke out, and her DEI-hired fire chief didn't deploy assets in this area because they knew the Santa Ana winds were coming and it was a high fire danger. Oh, and there was arson. There was a whole lot of shenanigans being pulled, as well as the electrical wires bouncing off each other and causing sparks to set the tender undergrowth afire. She wanted to pump up the fact that Palisades is being rebuilt. But it can't be that simple for a Democrat, tyrant, socialist, communist mayor. She has accused the survivors of disseminating misinformation and causing trauma. These survivors have been vocal in their criticism of local and state leadership, questioning the origins and management of the fire. Disinformation and misinformation. Same sad story. Bass was on CNN's The Story Is with Alex Mickelson, and she was questioned about her recent announcement that the city had officially issued its first certificate of occupancy to a developer home in the Pacific Palisades. Bass stated, quote, "Yes, but let me just say that there has been a lot of progress. Things have been moving fast. However, people are still out of their houses, and so until somebody is completely back at home in their community, it's not helpful to hear how fast everything is going." Bass further revealed that over 340 properties are currently under construction, which is about 5% of the structures that were destroyed in the Palisades. Bass said, quote, "What has been challenging, though, has been individuals on social media who deliberately put out misinformation that, in my opinion, just continues to traumatize people in the Palisades by saying no permits have been issued, things are slow, and not acknowledging what actually is happening." Close quote. So this new home that Bass was so proud to announce was met with backlash from those who know. They pointed out that this developer who built this house had initiated his application process 2 months before the fire occurred. How much is really happening in the Palisades? Not enough. You know, Newsom and Bass, when Trump went out there to view the damage, said they were going to cut through all the red tape and they were going to push all this forward and they were going to rebuild quick. It hadn't happened yet. Still waiting. One house. 5% have gotten permits, if that's what she's saying. That's pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. Well, here's something else that's pathetic. I found this in the California Globe, written by Katie Grimes. The San Francisco Department of Public Health gives free shots of alcohol to homeless street alcoholics and addicts under the guise of harm reduction. Do you get that? Free booze. Taxpayers in San Francisco have funded $16 million annually, $9 million for salaries and benefits, $5 million to program services. And this nonprofit served 55 clients in 4 years. Do the math. That's over $90,000 per client. This is anything but helping. This is a high-paid, publicly-funded jobs program for the well-connected. Just call it what it is. Community Forward claims it will keep the street alcoholics out of jails and hospital emergency rooms by giving them free booze. Attorney Laura Powell exposed this last year, said, quote, "San Francisco's managed alcohol programs provide homeless alcoholics with housing, meals, activities, including crafts and outings to Giants games, and a quantity of alcoholic beverages determined by their need and desire with no expectation of reducing consumption. With a reported budget of $5 million for 20 beds, half set aside for Latinx or indigenous people, it would be cheaper to accommodate these people in an all-inclusive resort." Close quote. In 2020, the San Francisco Department of Health used COVID as an excuse to shut down their sober center and set up this alcohol program in just 48 hours. It's amazing what they can do when they want to, right? They allow street alcoholics to make their own decisions about how much and how frequently they avail themselves of these free shots of booze. And Community Forward describes their amazing free alcohol program as, quote, this innovative model has shown to be extremely effective and works within a harm reduction lens, close quote. So I don't know about you, but as Katie Grimes says in this article, quote, giving alcohol to alcoholics, crack to crackheads, or heroin to heroin addicts results in more alcohol, crack, and heroin use, not less. There is no recovery or lessening the use of the substance. Community Forward SF Inc. on their IRS Form 990 says, quote, it helps those most in need to get off the street, achieve stability, and establish permanent housing by providing compassionate, culturally sensitive services, close quote. Well, let's see. The salaries are $1.159 million annually. The CEO gets $225,000 plus a year to serve 55 alcoholics endless booze. In 1 year, Community Forward spent $16.29 million on these things. Other salaries and wages, $7.178 million. Total salaries and compensation, $9.622 million, over 50% of their income. Employee benefits, $1.334 million. Pension plan, $31,598. Travel, $460,450. Where did they go? Staff training, $80,695. What is this, bartender school? You have to ask. They have taken in government grants of $15.379 million and have only raised $677,000 from other sources in 5 years. They've paid over $1 million in security services, almost $500,000 for janitorial service, over $580,000 for housekeeping and food supplies, and $112,000 plus for IT services. 55 homeless alcoholics were served in 5 years. That brings to mind the old Freddie Fender song, Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. Good night, nurse. It's as bad as the Festivus report. The amount of waste on stupidity. But wait, it doesn't stop there. This was in Blabber Buzz by Javier Sanchez. San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie quietly endorsed an ordinance in December establishing a reparations fund that can potentially offer up to $5 million to eligible black residents, despite acknowledging the city's lack of financial resources to support such payouts. This ordinance received unanimous approval from the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Mayor Lurie stated, quote, the city does not have resources to allocate to this fund, close quote. That's because San Francisco has a projected budget shortfall up to $936 million over the next 2 years. Expenditures continue to surpass revenue of the 800 or so thousand residents in San Francisco. Now, Elon Musk, not one to hold back and bite his tongue, has criticized this ordinance. He labeled the proposal as, quote, deeply morally wrong. California didn't even have slaves. Why is it right for someone who escaped tyranny in other countries and happens to live in San Francisco to pay reparations for something they had nothing to do with, close quote. So other critics have accused the city of establishing this reparations fund as something to cover their backside. It's only in name. Now, Gavin Newsom, the governor, signed legislation in October with the support of the supermajority of libtards up in Sacramento to create a Bureau for Descendants of American Slavery, which is responsible for implementing reparations policies. The funding was approved for the California State University system to research methods for verifying descendants of slaves seeking access to these benefits. California didn't have slaves, but we're going to have reparations. Stupid. Well, Trump made news when he sent the National Guard into Washington, D.C. to fight all the violent crime that was happening. And it, I don't know, was it shortly after one of the Doge members was beaten up in the city? And then Trump sent in the National Guard. Boy, controlled media was not happy about that because they kept quoting crime stats that had been put out by the Department Chief Pamela Smith. But now we find out that the Metropolitan Police Department was pressured to produce lower crime statistics. And Ms. Smith created a culture of fear and punished officers who didn't follow her command. James Comer, the Oversight Committee chairman, said, quote, Chief Smith's decision to mislead the public by manipulating crime statistics is dangerous and undermines trust in both local leadership and law enforcement, close quote. So instead of actually lowering crime, the piece of Chalif prioritized public crime statistics being reduced instead of actually policing. What's going on? To make matters worse, Smith sought an increased use in lower-level criminal charges that would go unreported to the public. Comer launched the investigation after Trump's decision to deploy the National Guard to quell violent crime. Sparked a national debate about D.C.'s crime statistics because critics of Trump's attributed the reductions in crime after the National Guard deployment to existing trends in the city's crime stats. But when you find out the piece of Chalif was doctoring the books, goodness, no wonder crime rates went down. Oh, yeah, we don't need the National Guard. No, we're taking care of it. Oh, here's a mass shooting over here, and here's drug dealing over here, and goodness gracious, burglary, carjackings. And then you've got these Soros-backed DAs who are reducing charges because they want to keep these people out of prison. Criminals are going to criminal. How many that have been set free by these worthless district attorneys, these worthless liberal judges that have gone back out onto the street and committed more and even more heinous crimes? There was one where the criminal stabbed that poor Ukrainian immigrant. There was another that set fire to a woman on public transportation. With a rap sheet a mile long, these criminals are being turned loose because the judge feels pity. Oh, it's a pipeline to the penitentiary. No, criminals are going to criminal. Thugs are going to thug. The best thing you can do is get them out of society. They have no place. They have no remorse. They could care less. And if they think they got away with it this time, they're going to do even more damage the next time because I'm untouchable. Cause and effect. I keep saying it over and over, cause and effect. Man, it's so common sense, but we cannot bring ourselves to teach it in our schools and to live it in our everyday lives. It seems like the globalists are winning. They want us to turn into a third world dung heap. And we're acquiescing. But keep doing your due diligence. Independent reporters, keep doing your job. Get out there and expose all this garbage. Let the people know. That's the only way we're going to win. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time. I greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.